just love that music. Doesn't that feel exciting when you hear that? So, hey, I am Cheryl Hirsch Kramer. I am your host. As always, happy, so happy that you've chosen to be with us right now, whether you are live or you're catching us after the fact. The fact that you're choosing to spend some time with me really feels terrific. Thank you for your interest, and I'm going to make this show as worthwhile as I possibly can. This is very dear to my heart, this one. So what do you do when life happens? You're going to see a different way of going catalytic tonight, baby. We're going to talk about going all in with love. Now, if you're scared and you want to run away from this, you're probably in the majority of people I've met. For whatever reason, humans have this really interesting thing going on. We want love, or so we say, and then when it shows up, we hightail out of there as fast as we can. Why do we do this? Why do we play this game with ourselves? There are many reasons. I don't know all of them. You don't know all of them. I don't know anybody who knows all of them. But we're going to talk today about what happens when we choose to go all in with love, when we choose to say, yeah, I'm scared and I'm doing it anyhow. When we choose to say, I have no idea what I'm doing and I'm doing it anyhow. You're going to hear some amazing stories. I know they're true because I lived all of them, about what happens when we go all in with love and what's possible when we go all in with love. So today is an anniversary for me. I have to do this show about this anniversary, otherwise I'd be out of integrity with myself. My mother went into her final illness on February the 9th of 2011. 5 years ago at this time, I was packing a suitcase, getting ready to spend some time with her. I'd arranged for hospice. I had gotten everything together that needed to happen, and I was ill. So I took some time to rest and recover as much as I could before making a very difficult trip. And it ended as a part of my life that, amazingly enough, I'm not completely sorry to leave. Not just the part where I lost my mom, no. Being in a dementia community was an amazing, heart-opening, paradigm-bending, completely unexpected experience for me. And in no way am I going to come out as an advocate for people getting dementia. No, you're not going to hear that here. It may sound like it at times, but here's where I go with it. All of us have choice as to how we're going to experience life. No matter what happens, no matter how horrible it is, no matter how different it is, we have a choice as to how we're going to experience it. When my mother fell on Christmas Eve of 06 and she had a catastrophic head injury, there was a part of me that was excited, and I know that sounds weird. I did not want her to fall. Matter of fact, I had guilt around the fact that she had fallen. I blame myself for not checking her shoes carefully. Whatever it was I could have blamed myself for, I found a way to do it. And I eventually came to the realization that this was something that she called out to experience, and I wasn't really to blame for this. So I was excited when I heard that she was going to come to live with me. My mom was in the hospital. She had a broken nose. She had a broken shoulder. And she had a concussion, but they didn't make a big deal out of the concussion. They were more concerned about the blood transfusion. She had lost a lot of blood. She fell on her face, okay, hit her forehead, broke her nose, so she went face down. They were more concerned about the blood she had lost than whatever brain damage she might or might not have had. So they were concerned about it, so I wasn't either. And we ended up doing physical therapy for the injuries. We had people coming to my house. We had a physical therapist. We had an occupational therapist who came to help her. We had a home health care worker who bathed her and helped her do personal hygiene things. I had her out. We were always practicing the homework that the speech therapist gave her. I don't know if you know this, but when you have a head injury, they want to work on developing your speech. So developing the speech helps to activate parts of the brain that might have gotten injured in the fall. So we had a speech therapist come to the house, and I would do her homework. And to this day, I can still tell you things about the Grand Canyon nobody really should know, because one of the things we had to practice was this thing about the Grand Canyon is a mile deep, and the Colorado River is doing this. And I know a lot of stuff about the Colorado River and the Grand Canyon. Nobody really should know who doesn't live anywhere near there, but I know this stuff. So we had this experience where I was out before my mother fell. I'd written a book, and I'd self-published it the year before. That's when it cost some money to self-publish. These days, it's cheaper and easier, but when I did it, it was expensive, and it was scary. This was a book I wrote from my heart. This was a really important book for me, and I think I wrote a really good book. And I was on a book tour, and then something happened. I had to go off the book tour. I had to recover my health, but then I recovered my health, and I was getting ready to go back on the book tour. And in the moment I found out my mother had fallen, I said, that's it. No book tour, no nothing. She is going to be my joy. She is going to be my full-time job for as long as that needs to happen. I figured that she was going to be living with me for a long time. That's what I expected, and I wanted it to happen. I wanted to take care of her. I wanted to give back to her for all the years she'd given to me, and I wanted to use what I'd learned about natural health to help her. I knew a lot, and I was happy to find an opportunity to do it. So she comes into my home after she finishes with the hospital, after she finishes with rehab. I bring her to my home, and she's not the same person. Her personality was different. She remembered things that didn't make any sense to me. I remember driving with her from my hometown to my home in New Jersey and having her keep asking me, when are we going to get to this one place that she used to go when she was a little girl? It was this kind of a beach, and I'd never been there, but I'd heard her talk about it over the years. And all of a sudden, the only thing she was interested in is, when are we going to get to the beach? Now, we're talking late January. So going to the beach in late January is not something we do in the northeastern U.S., but she was very interested in getting to the beach. So this was already a tip-off that something was different. And her personality was very erratic. You know, if you've seen the movie Concussion, that talks about, chronic traumatic encephalopathy, that talks about what happens when people have a brain injury. And I believe my mother may have had chronic traumatic encephalopathy. She became very erratic. She didn't express herself well a lot of the time. Sometimes she would get violent. Sometimes she would get nervous and stressed. Sometimes she would get great. She had poor impulse control. She had some aggression. Her judgment was certainly impaired. Her personality had definitely changed. And I didn't understand any of this because the doctors never clued me in that this could be an issue. So I started doing research. Whenever she would go to bed at night, I would come upstairs to the computer and research. And I learned a lot. I learned that she probably had something which at that time was called a traumatic brain injury, a TBI. And I learned things about what you can do to help TBI. So I started doing homeopathy, and I started doing energy therapy and having her work with energy therapists and shaman that I knew. I mean, very interesting that she would let me do all of this. But she knew I wanted her to feel better. She knew I was committed to her health. So she did a lot of things. We did cranial sacral therapy. We did crystals. We did, oh my God, aromatherapy. We did so many different things. And she did better. She wasn't well, but she was better. So I figured, okay, well, I can certainly live with this. But then I noticed that as time went on, it became more and more difficult to care for her in a way that was going to work for her. I couldn't leave the house without her freaking out. And she didn't want to come with me for rides in the car. It scared her. The idea of being in the car was scary for her. And that was never the case before. She always said what a good driver I was. So she wasn't afraid of my being a reckless driver. But the idea of leaving the house was really terrifying. And she would start to have tantrums and she would start to cry out. So I couldn't leave the house. There were a few times that I left the house. Like if a friend was visiting from out of the area, I had a friend at the time who lived in California, and she came east for some reason. So we made a choice to get together, and I left my mother at home for about 5 hours alone. I'm really blessed nothing bad happened. I didn't think it could happen at that point. I was still so ignorant of what I was dealing with. But I didn't think anything bad was going to happen to her, but apparently her angels took care of her and she was okay. So in 4 months, I only had maybe 5 or 6 hours out of the house, you know, total. I would go out for brief errands. I would try to get her with me. She didn't always want to do that. So I sent her home with care, and it didn't get better. It just didn't get better. And I thought it was going to get better. I went to the doctor about a year and a half after this happened with her. And he gave me a word for it. He says, I think she has dementia. I was happy to get a name for it. You know, most people would have flipped out. And I thought, well, okay, if it has a name, we can fix this, right? I know a lot of stuff. I can fix dementia. I can fix a lot of things. I'm really good at what I do. Well, this couldn't be fixed. And as much as I tried to fix it, it got worse and worse and worse. And found out that the supplements I was giving her, which were very good for controlling some of the symptoms, didn't do much for the violence, and I saw her go psychotic, and I couldn't figure out a way to deal with the psychosis. And again, I sent her home with care, worked with her doctor. Her last two doctors allowed me to take her case, which is very unusual for somebody who's not a physician, but they both knew I knew what I was doing. They knew I loved her. They knew I wanted the best for her. So they allowed me to take her case, and the situation got worse and worse, and when they have dementia, many times you'll hear that they leave home abruptly. They want to go somewhere, but we don't know where it is they want to go. They don't know necessarily where it is they want to go. You know, they'll say they want to go home, and then logic would tell you the answer would be, well, you are home, but this isn't the home they want to be. Maybe they want to be in their childhood home, or maybe they want to be in the home that they lived when they first got married. Or maybe they want to live in a home that was never their home or was a friend's home, but they think it's their home. There are many possibilities what home could be. Well, she lived on a main street and they had lots of trucks and buses. She'd already been hit by a truck years before, just walking on the street way before the brain injury ever showed up. And it didn't feel safe to have her at home anymore when she would find ways to leave the house, even with 24/7 care. We had 24/7 care, we had live-in care. And she still found a way to escape, and that just terrified me. So I had to break a promise I had made to her. I had to put her in memory care. I promised her she would never have to do that. By that time, she'd forgotten I made the promise, but I didn't. So on Mother's Day of 2009, guess what I did for my mother? I put her in memory care. And I researched long and hard to find the right place. And that's what we're going to talk about tonight, going all in with love. I have never been in the community that was so devoted to love as I was during the time that she lived in memory care. And that doesn't make sense, right? Does that make sense to you? You know, you would think that it's always bad because everything you hear about Alzheimer's and dementia, that's really bad stuff, okay? And it is bad stuff. You know, they change. They end up being unable to function in their lives at all. Many times they can't walk anymore. Many times they can't eat anymore. Many times they stop talking. You know, they have many things that happen as they go through their process. And every dementia, like every snowflake, is different. So my mom's dementia was very different than my aunt, who also had dementia at the same time. We're going to talk about her as well. But so why am I talking about going all in with love? That was the one thing I found that really connected with her, connected with my aunt, connected with the people who worked at the memory care unit, the people who are residents at the memory care unit. So I'm going to share a number of stories during our time together tonight of what is possible when you go all in with love. Now, we live in a time where a relationship is terrifying. You know, people start when they meet somebody for a romantic relationship, and happy Valentine's Day, by the way, if that's something that you celebrate. When you meet somebody from a romantic relationship, it's now acceptable to create the end of the relationship before you start the actual relationship. One of the things you hear is, well, this might not last, or this might not be something that's going to work out. And isn't that weird to start a relationship with the back door already in place? They already have the escape route planned. They want a relationship with you, but they already know that they can get out if they have to. So as long as they have that in place, let's go forward. Yeah. Another thing that happens in relationship these days is as soon as somebody develops feelings for the other person, they have to leave because that's scary. I don't know what to do with this. I'm much more comfortable being with somebody I don't care about than with somebody I do care about, and I got to get out of here. You know, we have found ourselves living in a time when a lot of people have given up on the idea completely of relationship. So they end up developing these very curious spouse relationship with their pets. Have you seen this? I was one of those people. You know, it was easier for me to communicate with my dog than it was for me to communicate with other people. So my dog became my caregiver. My dog became my very best friend. My dog became the one who understood me, wasn't looking for the back door out of the relationship, wasn't looking to disrespect where I was. She loved and respected me and supported me wherever I was. When I first had the big stroke almost 4 years ago, I had to learn how to walk steps all over again. I'd forgotten how to do that. When my dog came to live with me in September of 2003, she'd never seen steps before. I had to teach her how to walk the steps. Well, now it was reversed. I had to watch her to relearn how to walk the steps. So she was my caregiver. So I ended up spending more time with her than anybody else. So in effect, she was my spouse, just no sex, but you know, she was my spouse. There's something wrong with the world in which we make our animals into our spouses. Why can't our animals just be our animals? Why can't they just have fun? Why can't we just enjoy them for what they are instead of putting all of our hopes and dreams into our animals? And I did that. So I'm not criticizing anybody. I've not done this myself. I have done this myself. Two-thirds of the marriages now end in divorce, right? So people are afraid to get married. Well, here's what happens in the dementia units. I had this happen after the stroke as well, so I've lived this myself. When the brain doesn't work as well as it used to, you go into the hearts, right? It's hard to think, it's hard to process, it's hard to solve problems, it's hard to speak sometimes, it's hard to be present in the way you'd like to. So all that stuff kind of gets turned off, and the energy focuses on going into the heart. The people I met in dementia units, and I've visited too, I visited my aunts and my mothers, and there are exceptions to this. Their hearts were so beautifully open, and we were able to have such beautiful relationships with each other because their hearts were open. They didn't push me away. They didn't push my love away. They wanted to be a part of my life. I know myself going into the world now and wanting to be sociable and meet people and all that. I'm just starting to do that now. I haven't done that in a few years, but I'm starting to do that now. And I tell people about my situation. I do what Sharon Stone did. I don't know if you know that Sharon Stone had a stroke some years back, and she had brain surgery. She almost died. She really had a very major situation going on there. And she's gorgeous, as we know, sexy as all get out, an amazing woman, funny, smart woman, brilliant woman. And she has a hard time getting dates. At least she did in the last interview I read. I hope she's found somebody now. And she just goes out there with it. What she says is the equivalent of, "I have brain damage. You'll just have to deal with it." And I do that too. I really get out there. If I meet somebody I like or they express an interest in me, I make it really clear that I look good, but there's stuff going on inside of me that you don't know about. So before you decide to get involved with me, let me tell you what's going on in my life. And they run. I'm not trying to push them away. I want them to stay. But I think it's the most respectful thing I can do is to say, "Here's my situation. Can you handle it?" And most of them say a lot of things and they get the hell out of Dodge, and that's the end of that. So in a dementia unit, what happens is you see that they are definitely working with brains that aren't working the way they used to work. And they want connection so much. They really do. Even when they're violent, they want connection. They're just scared. That's all that really is. So they want us to show them that we still love them. We still will be there for them no matter what. And let me start telling some stories. Okay. So I moved my mom into memory care, Mother's Day of 2009. She did not want to be there. She wanted to go, but once she saw it, she didn't want to be there. And she started yelling at me, which I understood. I didn't take it personally, and she wanted nothing to do with me. And the people who ran the unit, who were very good, loving, wise people, said, "Don't contact her. We'll let you know when the time is right. It won't be long, but don't contact her. Don't visit her. Don't do any of that stuff." So I had to just trust I'd made the right decision, which I ended up, yes, I did make the right decision. These are people who really care about the people they're taking care of, okay? They don't look at them as dementia patients. They look at them as friends. They look at them as residents. They look at them as people. They don't look at them as sick people. They look at them as people. And that's a really important distinction to make. They are real. They honor them for where they are. They honor wherever they are in their process. One of the first things I remember once I was able to visit my mom, this memory care unit had a protected courtyard. So the residents were able to walk in and out as they wanted to during the daylight hours. And it was patrolled. People would come around frequently to make sure nobody had fallen or gotten in any sort of trouble. But the residents had the freedom to walk around as much as they wanted to walk around, as long as the weather was okay, as long as it was daylight. So my mom and I are sitting out in the courtyard, and we see one of the residents, and he's walking hand in hand with one of the caregivers. And this is a man in his, I would say, 70s at that point. And men are not known for being expressive of their feelings with people they don't know very well. And with dementia, every day is a different adventure. The caregiver that you knew yesterday might be a complete stranger to you today. He's walking hand in hand with the caregiver. I love this caregiver very much. She died very young, and I'm sorry because she was such a beautiful person. So this caregiver was named Denise, and she's holding hands with this man. And he said, "I love you." And she said to him back, "I love you more." And he said to her back, "I love you more." And she said to him back, "I love you more." Where do you see conversations like this in real life? You don't. And conversations like this can only happen when somebody is willing to go vulnerable, willing to throw all in with love. And I know in that moment he did love her. And I know in that moment she did love him. It was really clear. the energy was gorgeous between the two of them. And that's what happens when you get over your fear of going for it, when you get over your fear of going all in with love. When you just say to somebody, I love you so much, and you're not concerned about their reaction, doesn't matter what their reaction is. Of course, you want them to say it back, but it doesn't matter because your truth right now in that moment is, I love you more. That was a real eye-opener. Now, as my mom got used to the place, she started making friends. There were three of them that hung out with my mom. I called them the cool girls. I think the youngest one was around 82. My mom at that point was around 90. One of them told me she was 62, but at that point, I think she was 88. You know, her memory has stopped. Many women forget their age, but she really did forget her age. So there were four of them, and they would walk hand in hand. It was like a skating line where they would walk hand in hand everywhere. They would go from the kitchen together to the community room together to the living room to watch television together, always together. One of the women adopted my mother as her special project. When my mom came, she realized that my mom needed to be nurtured. Now, this woman never was married, never took care of a family, but she wanted to mother my mother. So she taught my mother the ropes of being there. She would always sit with my mother at meals, and she would talk with my mother. My mother was really scared, and this woman became her friend. Well, later on, the woman's dementia progressed to the point that she became violent, and she started to bite and kick my mother and scratch her, and they had to separate the two of them, and they weren't friends again. But that's one of the things we learn in memory care. Things last as long as they last. We don't always know how long the relationship is going to last. We expect it's going to last, though. And sometimes in memory care, you can really dislike somebody one day, and the next day they're your best friend again. You know, so it's not like I want to leave the relationship. You know, I need to grow with somebody else now. I need to have more stimulation from somebody else. We've gone as far as we're going to go. No, memory care is a whole different opportunity. Memory care, one day somebody could be your worst enemy, and the next day they will hug and kiss you and say, I love you, and they will mean it. So it's about living in the present, and it's about releasing expectations about what something is going to be. The cool girls were really wonderful together. I just loved hanging out with them. They were fun. They were really a lot of fun to be with. So as my mom lived there longer, and I got to spend more time with her, there was one day that just completely shocked me for what was possible in life. My mother was always afraid of men. Her mother made her get married. Her mother thought she should be married. My mother didn't want to marry my father. But her mother said, he's a good man, you're going to marry him. And my mother was afraid to go against her mother, so they got married. And my mother forgot that she'd been married pretty early on in the dementia process and the head injury process. And when my mom was young, she was shipped out to live with various relatives. There were three kids in the family, and they thought it was best to ship out the girl. And I'm sure my mom was sexually violated. The way she was with men, I've no doubt that that's what happened to her when she was a young girl. Well, here she is in a mixed-sex memory care unit. And one day, she and I are sitting out again in the courtyard, and one of the residents comes over to her. And his dementia had progressed to the point where he could not speak words that made sense. He could make noises, but they were syllables, and I couldn't understand them at all. So this man, who's probably a little younger than my mom, hard to tell, walks up to my mother, pretty much nose to nose with her, and starts very passionately yelling at my mother, pointing at her in her face with his index finger. And my mom, I'm thinking, oh God, this is going to be awful. I don't know how we're going to get through this. This is going to scare my mother. My mother doesn't like men. I was remembering my mother before she moved into the memory care unit, right? So my perception of my mother was not an accurate perception in that moment. So I'm thinking, God, please take care of this. Please make sure this ends okay. Nobody gets hurt in this interaction. Nobody gets traumatized. Nobody has a bad reaction. My mother allowed this man to speak, and he spoke very passionately and very energetically for maybe five full minutes. And when he was done, she looked at him and she said to him, I know exactly what you mean. Can you imagine? This is a woman who is diagnosed with dementia, who is able to connect heart to heart with somebody who's unable to speak. I remember thinking in that moment, I've been listening with my ears. I've got to start listening with my heart. And that really turned the corner for me. This is the kind of thing we see in memory care all the time. We see miracles all the time because people's hearts are open. My mom, when she was younger, wanted to be a social worker. Maybe that directed her reaction, that part of her that wanted to help other people. My mom, while she was living in memory care, was the person that the caregivers would come to talk about their problems. Isn't that amazing? They would go to a resident, somebody who had dementia, and they would tell her what was going on. And my mom would listen, and sometimes she would give advice, and sometimes she would just listen. So the idea that dementia means they can't listen anymore or they can't give good feedback anymore, that's not always true, or it's not always true for the entire dementia experience. Sometimes that does happen later on. So my mom became the caregiver's favorite. They all hung out with my mother. And on the bad days, they still wanted to be with her because they saw how sweet she was. My mom was always a very non-emotional person. When I was growing up, she was depressed. She depressed her emotions to survive. So I wasn't used to a mother who was emotionally expressive or happy or anything like that. She was happy in memory care. She felt cared about. She felt important. They all made a fuss over her when she would play the word games. She was really good at word games. And again, you don't hear about this with dementia patients. My mom rocked. My mom was great with geography. You could say to her, name me a country that begins with Y. And she would immediately say Yugoslavia. I mean, seriously? So my mom was getting a lot of positive feedback for being great at word games. My mom was getting a lot of positive feedback for being a kind person. She had her girlfriends. It was not a bad life. And it was a true experience in disbelief for me, because I promised her I would never do this thing to her, and it turned out doing this thing to her was the best thing I could have done, because she was loved and she was supported and she had her friends. It was quite amazing. The director of the unit was very passionate about taking care of the residents, and she said, no funny business ever goes on here. I get rid of those people before they even start. I can sniff them out. So you've got nothing to worry about as long as your mom is here. Don't worry about it. Your mom is going to be very well cared for. And she was. I saw it. When I would come to see her, she was not a person who was in fear. She was a person who knew that she was cared about. And when my mother went into memory care, which is, again, in Mother's Day of 2009, I met a lot of people there. And I met the director. And I met her girlfriends. And I started to really develop my own relationships with these people. The director said to me, the day I moved my mother in, I understand you don't have much family. And I said, that's true. She says, we're your family. You come to us if you're having a problem. Here's a book that you can read about how to handle the stress that goes with this. We know you're under a lot of stress, and we want to help you with your stress. So they became my family, and I still call occasionally just to check in and say hi. And the receptionist still knows my voice. My mom's been dead almost 5 years now, but she still recognizes my voice. We have great conversations. She now had another baby and moved into a new house. And I keep up with the people. They're my friends. They're my family. Even though my mom is no longer here, the connections are still there. They love me and I love them, and that's never going to go away. Now, my mom was in memory care at the same time my aunt was in memory care. They had two very different dementias. Both of them had a dementia that was not organic. My mom's came from a head injury, and my aunt's came from, she had COPD. She was using a breathing tube and didn't want to keep using the breathing tube. So one day, she was a very clear-minded person. She was around 90. She just said, I'm done with the breathing tube, but she pulled it out. Well, her brain was deprived of oxygen, so she had something called hypoxia, and that put her right into dementia. My mother's dementia was very different than my aunt's. My aunt's dementia, she had very good short-term memory, but awful long-term memory, just awful. My mom had really bad long-term memory, but one of them had long-term, one had short-term. Please forgive me, I forget who was which in this moment. So I would go visit my aunt, and she would ask the same 8 questions over and over and over again for 45 minutes. And the questions were things like, do you still live in that town? How's your dog doing? You remember what happened, the Revolutionary War in your town? Because I lived near a battlefield that was big in the Revolutionary War. And she would say, how's your mother doing? And she would go through the same 8 questions, and then would start over again. 2 minutes later, same 8 questions again. The woman who later became my grief counselor, the hospice worker who also helped care for my aunt, said to me once, I don't know how you do it. She would drive me crazy. And I said, it's easy. I still love her. She's still my aunt. I still look at her, and I know who she is. And she always knew who I was. She never forgot my name. She always knew who I was, always appreciated my visits. Well, I would go to visit her. And I got to a point where it was time to clear out my mother's apartment. I needed to sell it to get the money to continue to care for my mom. And I knew my mom didn't remember that she'd been married before, certainly wouldn't remember my father. And I found photographs of my father. My aunt was my father's sister. And I brought one of the photographs of my father over to see my aunt. This photograph was taken when my dad had been drafted in World War II. My dad almost died in World War II. So this photograph was taken before he was shipped over for D-Day, where it's amazing he survived. So he's in his uniform. He looks very handsome. And I said, Aunt, I want to show you this photograph of my dad. You know, maybe it's something that you would like to have. And all of a sudden, she looked at it, and she said, I remember when this photograph was taken. Now, again, this is the woman who would ask me the same 8 questions over and over and over again. She saw this photograph. She remembered my dad. She also remembered that my dad had passed away. And she said, when did your dad die? And I told her. And she says, and you're taking care of your mother, right? And I said, yeah, I'm taking care of my mother. And she says, how old are you now? And I told her my age. And she says, and you poor girl, you've had no life to yourself. You've had to take care of your mother all your life, ever since your father died. I was stunned. In that moment, her love for my dad and her love for me broke her out of that thought process, those 8 questions over and over and over again. And I left the photograph with her. I knew it was something she wanted to have, so I got her a frame, and I left her the photograph. And whether she ever mentioned him again to me or not, I don't recall in this moment. I know in that moment she was really happy to have the photograph of her baby brother. And that is, one thing people make a mistake with dementia is they assume that they're not still there. They assume that they're different people. They assume that they can't do things. Well, they can do a lot of things. And it's just a matter of creating the space to allow for that to happen. I have a friend whose father died of Alzheimer's, and she reminded me of a story last week I want to share with you right now. Her father loved her very much. She was the baby of the family. She had a bunch of brothers, and then she came along, and she was the last one. And her father was, I think, in his 90s when he got Alzheimer's. He lived at home for a long time before he eventually went into a facility, and he stopped speaking. No speech at all for 4 or 5 months straight. He would walk. He would nod. I don't know if he interacted very much, but he was at that place in his Alzheimer's where he just didn't speak anymore. Now, my friend is a retired nurse, so she cared for all sorts of patients over the years. Well, one day she found out that it was either her pension or her husband's pension was being given over to them. They were supposed to put it in the bank. Something changed with their pension plan, and she was really scared. She was afraid of the tax hit that she was going to have to take. She didn't know what to do. So because she was a nurse, and because she knows the miracles happen all the time, she went to her father, the man who hadn't spoken a word in 4 or 5 months, and said, Pop, I got a problem. I need your help. We got this check for our pension. It's a big sum of money, and I'm afraid I'm going to get a big tax hit. I don't know how I'm going to be able to afford this tax hit. And her father looked at her and said, Kid, you listen to me. Here's what you do. You open up a trust. You put that check in the trust. The government won't come near you, I promise you. Now, can you imagine how she felt? Her father hasn't said a word in 4 or 5 months, and he's giving her tax advice. So don't ever think that they can't come forward. When the love is that strong, when the desire to help is that strong, miracles can happen. I saw it all the time. That's memory care. They never stop being themselves. Parts get hidden, but then parts can also come back, and that's the truly amazing part of it. Parts can come back. Longer my mother was in memory care, I got close with her friends, the Cool Girls. And they knew I was her daughter. They didn't know my name, but I brought the cupcakes, and they liked me because I brought the cupcakes. And I know that it's not good to give them wheat, that there's a lot of information out that wheat is not good for them. At that point, we just wanted to keep them happy. I talked about it with the nurses. I talked about it with the staff, and they said, sure, you want to give them cupcakes, go right ahead. So I'd bring miniature cupcakes in. They couldn't handle big cupcakes. They'd lost the dexterity to handle big cupcakes. So I brought miniature cupcakes. And I would give them cupcakes, and we would talk. And we would develop real relationships. One of the women my mother hung out with was very much of a lady. She was very elegant. And she lost her husband. And then all of a sudden, her brother died not long after. And she just decided she was done. And that's when dementia happened. It was a broken heart dementia for her. And I really loved her. She was a good friend. She was very sweet to my mother at all times, very gracious to me. And when she passed away, I went out and I did a ceremony for her at the ocean. I wanted to remember her that way. Excuse me. So we develop real relationships. There are real people in there, and their hearts are present. So if you want to know what it feels like to live in a place that's surrounded with love, but the memory care unit was that place for me. I'll never forget it. It was amazing. Now, we talked about love and dementia. I'm going to say one more dementia story before we move on to other miracles of love. I am an ordained minister, and I performed my one and only marriage ceremony several months after my mother passed away. I wasn't able to eat, and I was going to this restaurant, and I would eat maybe three bites and take the rest home. The waitress took pity on me. We became friends, and she was getting married, and I said, if you need a minister, I'm ordained. I would love to perform the ceremony. So I did, and it was like 3 months after I started going to her restaurant. So she got married. It was an outdoor wedding. It was really beautiful. And during the reception, I got to speak with her husband. And I mentioned my mother had just died from dementia. And he said his father had Alzheimer's. And he told me a story. He was growing up in a family which was a lot of kids. And it was a very dictatorial family. His father, you did what he said. There was no ifs, ands, and buts. My way or the highway. He never felt close with his father. He always felt afraid of his father. He couldn't do anything right. And the father called him on everything he did that was wrong. So he always felt judged and criticized by his father. And then later in life, what happens is his father develops Alzheimer's. And his father goes into his heart. And the groom developed a beautiful relationship with the father. He said, I'm so glad we had that time together because it helped me heal so much damage I had from growing up. My father became my friend. And we got to end our time together in this life as friends. And as beings who really loved each other. So this is how it feels to be in a place where you can go all in with love. When you go all in with love, it is scary. There's no question. What happens if I get hurt? What happens if I get left? What happens if they get bored with me? Now, our minds can come up with all sorts of reasons to not want to do this. Our minds are so good at pushing away love. It's a protection thing, right? We're trying to get protected from getting hurt, so our minds come up with, oh, this person, you know, I used to know their ex-girlfriend, or, you know, he's been married a couple of times, you know, that's a bad bet, or, you know, he drinks a glass of wine at dinner every night, so he's probably going to be a drunk. You know, there's all sorts of things to come up. And then what happens is when we make the decision to just love, whatever you're afraid of happening, whatever I'm afraid of happening, just drop it and love without expectation of anything other than the fact that we're loving each other. The best words in the world I can tell you right now for stroke recovery, for me, have been, I love you. When somebody says I love you to me, as I've been going through the recovery process for the last 4 years, every cell of my body stands up in attention and says, thank you. Oh, that feels so good. It's exactly what I need. There were a lot of people when I was going through the early stages, they thought they were helping me by telling me everything I was doing wrong. No, I already knew everything I was doing wrong. What I needed was people to tell me they love me, whether I did stuff wrong or did stuff right. So the people who say I love you, these are the healers. Even if they don't do anything else, these are the healers. And love is indeed the greatest healing energy that there is. I found some quotes today. Love is the dynamic that held the universe together, according to Heraclitus. Love is the unifying force of the universe, according to Empedocles. And some of these go back to, I think, the last quote I gave you, 5th century BCE. So this ain't new information, guys. This is old information, but we tend to forget that love is the way to heal. I've told you the story the last few weeks about how my dog recovered from terminal cancer. She was supposed to be dead in 6 weeks. But because she was loved and prayed for and had fun and her life became a total joy and delight, the cancer cleared in a month and we had 2 more years together. She did not die of cancer. She died of old age. So love is the way to go. My job here tonight is to inspire you to say, okay, I've never really understood love before. I don't know what it is now, but I want to learn. Now, who's in my life right now I can learn this with? Maybe it's a parent. I did that with my mom. My mom and I had a terrible relationship for the first 43 years. And I called her out and I said, I'm tired of this. I want a mother now. And God bless her, she responded. And for the last 15 years of her life, we were close. She was my best friend. She was beautiful, even with dementia. Even with everything I went through taking care of her, we became close because I called her out. So who do you have in your life right now who you can call out? Who is ready to love you back? Who's going to walk through their fear? You can talk. You can be the first one. You can say, look, I'm really scared of doing this. We haven't ever gotten along well, but I really want to do this with you. I did that with my mom. With my mom, we never had a physically affectionate relationship. We never hugged. We never said, I love you. She was kind of like my enemy. She wanted me to be her. So I didn't know how to be her because I had to be me. And she didn't like that. She thought I should be her. So one day I called her out and I said, you know, Mom, I can't do this anymore. I really want a mom. Your family had always taught me that you were a porcelain doll, that you were fragile. And I had to be very careful what I said to you and what I did around you. Well, you know what? They're all dead now and you're alive. That tells me you're not all that fragile after all. So I need you to be my mom. I need you to step up. I need you to support me. I need you to be there for me. I need you to be my cheerleader. I'm going through a very scary time in my life and I need my mom. Will you do that for me? And she was stunned, but she did it. She was waiting for someone to call her out. And we started small. I would call her every day. And I would always end the conversation saying, I love you. Now, I didn't know if I meant it, okay? I didn't know if I meant those words, but I knew I had to say those words, and hopefully I would mean them at some point, and I did. And I had to say them without ever expecting to get them back. And eventually they came back. So we always ended conversations by saying, I love you. Next, we started to hug each other. I had to work with that one, too. I don't come from a physically affectionate family. The part of the world my people are from, they're just not physically affectionate. So I'm hugging somebody without being comfortable doing it, and I'm hugging somebody who's also not comfortable doing it. But we did it, and then she would always hug me. And it's good that I did this because at the end of her life, February the 9th, 2011, you know, she went into her final illness. That night, there was a man in my life at that point who promised to be there for me all the way through. He said, you shouldn't go through this alone. I will be there to support you. I'll do everything I can to make sure that you feel cared about. For whatever reason, blew up at me, told me off, told me I was having an ego-based reaction to a natural part of life, and I wasn't handling this well. Picked a fight for every reason he could find to pick a fight with me. I don't know why he did this. I have theories, but I'll never know for sure. And I went into PTSD. It was the last straw. I was tired from caring for her for 50 months, 4 years and 2 months. Not only was I tired from caring for her, I was under a lot of stress. This was my mom's final illness. She was going to die. I was making life and death decisions. Plus, I was sick. The last thing I needed was to have this conversation. And I went into PTSD. I cried and I shook all night long. By the time I finally got to my mother's bedside, she was in a coma. So I could tell her what I wanted to tell her, but I couldn't hear it back from her. Right? So that's what happened at the end of my mother's life. That I wasn't able to have her say to me, I love you back. Well, after she passed away, I kept calling the facility. And one day I got one of her favorite caregivers on the phone. And I hadn't spoken to the caregiver since my mother had passed away. So she's talking about her memories of my mom. And she said something that I so needed to hear. She says, your mother used to say to me, I know Cheryl loves me because she always tells me so when she hangs up the phone with me. So if you ever wonder why to start saying I love you to a parent or to a loved one you've never said it to, you might have something happen to you the way it happened to me. At the end of my mother's life, we couldn't have that last conversation. I really needed to know that she understood that I loved her. And thanks to that caregiver passing along that memory, I understood it. So I know it's scary to say I love you to somebody you've never said it to. I know it's scary to hug people you've never hugged before. Believe me, I've been through all of it. I know how scary all this is. Please try. You may end up thanking me someday for it. I don't care if you thank me or not. I just want you to have that closure that you can know that somebody passed knowing that they know that you love them. So important to have that kind of closure. So those are the dementia stories. I'm going to end with a couple more stories before we end up tonight. This was a good one. Okay, so many years ago, I became attuned in integrated energy therapy. I'm a master instructor of that. One of my friends, right after I was attuned, she's a breeder of dogs, And please don't get on her because she breeds dogs. She loves the breed. She wants to make sure that the dogs are bred properly so that they have healthy dogs that live long and healthy lives and continue the breed. There's a lot of disrespect going to dog breeders these days. And, these people really love their animals, and they don't treat the dogs badly. Not all of them. Some of them do, but many of them don't. Many of them just love these like they're members of the family. So, please don't disrespect anybody for being a breeder. They really want to do this. Well, she had a litter of puppies born on her birthday, and the litter did not thrive. One of the puppies, I think, went to a different home, but she kept two of them for hopefully to keep them as her pets or breeding stock or whatever. And they developed a parvo-like virus. It wasn't parvo. And if you don't know what parvo is, look it up. It's bad news. Well, she took the dogs to the vet, and the vet did everything the vet knew how to do, quarantined the dogs, gave the dogs medication. Anybody who visited the dogs had to wear a hospital gown and a mask. And she was concerned that her dogs weren't going to make it. This was a very important litter because they were born on her birthday. So she asked me, because she knows I do intuitive work, could you just check in on them and tell me what I need to know? I said, sure. I never met the puppies at this point. They were, she lives a distance away from me. I hadn't met the dogs. So I just tuned in with the little girl puppy, and I said, what do you want me to know? And she says, take me home. I will not get well, and neither will my brother if we're kept here. I want to be with my mommy. Take me home. Get me out of here. I can't stand this place. I can't see anybody. They wear face masks and they wear hospital gowns. I want to see people. I want to smell people. I want to know that I'm loved. I want to be held. My mommy's not able to hold me. I need to be held. I need to be loved. Take me home. Well, let me tell you, I was scared passing this message along. What if I was wrong? What if she took these dogs home and they died? It'd be on me that she followed my advice. So I said to her, I had the disclaimer in, maybe I didn't get this clearly, but this is what I heard. And whatever you do, please don't think I'm telling you what to do. I'm just sharing what I heard when I ask your puppy. And she says, no, that advice makes a lot of sense to me. So she went to the vet, and the vet said, yeah, you can take them home. There was nothing else the vet could do. The vet was out of options. So he released the puppies, and they are now 13 years old. They've had litters. They're healthy, happy dogs. And because they needed to be loved, it was the love that made the difference. She said to me, I need to know that I'm loved. I need to be held. I need to be cuddled. I need to be with my mommy. And we saved a life when we decided to give the dogs the care that they needed. At that point, it wasn't medical care, it was love. So I'm not saying to do this. Please go to vets. If you have any health problems, go to your doctor, go to your vet, get the care that you need. I'm not telling you to do this. I'm just sharing what happened in this one situation. And the dogs lived a very happy life, and they're still doing great. Age 13, you're doing terrific. There's a love life-saving story. Another one, if you're a fan of the show, you may remember back in October, we did a broadcast with a friend of mine and her daughter, who was a high-risk pregnancy, and she was born at 25 weeks. She was born 1 pound, 2 ounces. The baby fit in the palm of my friend's hand. You remember this show? If you can still get it through the archives. BBSradio.com/catalytic. You can call up that show. It's with Fran Cederer and Emily Cederer. Well, Fran, when she was pregnant, wanted her baby, and she was determined that she was going to have a healthy baby. The doctors all told her, this is not going to work out. Start making your peace with the fact that this is not going to happen for you. And she believed that this was going to work out, whether or not she believed it. For a logical reason, she just believed it was going to work out. And even when she was bleeding, they put her in the hospital on complete bed rest. She had to leave her son, who was a young boy at home, to go for complete bed rest. She says, I know I'm going to have a healthy baby. And she willed that baby to live. She loved that baby enough that that baby lived. And the baby is now in her 20s, beautiful girl. All the things they said were going to be wrong with her, they were wrong about. She did not have cerebral palsy. She was not brain damaged. She's gorgeous. She's funny. She's smart. She's everything you'd want in person. Well, a few years ago, my friend in Canada told me that she had a client who was also in a high-risk pregnancy. She didn't know what to do for the client. Both the client and the client's husband were products of high-risk pregnancies. So having a baby together, I guess, was going to be more risky because of their history. And they really wanted to have the baby. and it did not look good. So I was asked to tune in and see if I knew anything, and I tuned in. And what I heard the baby say, again, this is Canada, I'm in New Jersey, I'm not seeing this baby physically. What I heard the baby tell me was, I need to know that both parents are committed to me. I need to know that my daddy and my mommy are committed to me, and I need them to keep believing in me, keep opening their hearts to me, and keep trusting that I'm going to be here, because I want to do this. But I need to know that they're going to be there for me. Well, my friend's client was already committed to it. Her husband was terrified. Her husband was so scared, first of all, that his wife was going to die giving birth. And he was also scared about opening his heart to somebody who might not live. So there was a lot of fear around this. I passed along the message anyhow. That's what I was supposed to do. And the friend's client told the husband. And he realized, yes, he was holding back his love for the baby. He was afraid to commit to the baby. And he knew he had to commit to the baby. So he started doing this, even though he was terrified. He started opening his heart to this baby and started talking to the baby, started believing that the baby would be born healthy. Well, it came time for the baby to be born, and the wife nearly died in childbirth. But the baby is thriving today, and the wife is healthy now. So when we commit, when we go all in with love, lives can be saved. They really can. Even though they had the great health care up there and they had good health care, the baby needed to know how loved he was going to be, how loved he was in that moment, and how loved he was going to be later. It was an amazing experience to be a part of this. I'm so glad I got to do it. So these are stories about what happens when you throw in with love all the way. And for those of us who are longing for connection, and who can't say that they're doing that, on some level we're all longing for connection with God, or connection with another person, or with another being of some sort. The best way to get that is to say, I'm scared, and I'm doing it anyhow. And my mom would be proud of me right now for doing this show. I can tell you that right now. My mom was my best teacher of love. When my father died, and I may have mentioned this in a previous broadcast, my father died, I was 17, and I wished it had been my mother. I knew my father loved me. I didn't think my mother loved me. So I actually wished my mother dead. We didn't always have a good relationship. But I'm glad that my mother did live. If I had to lose a parent, I wouldn't have wanted to lose either one. I wanted them both in my life. But my mother was my greatest teacher because we didn't have a loving relationship. We evolved one. We both worked for it, and we both had it. One of the best things I've ever done in my life was to be her caregiver. I learned so much. I learned so much about love. One thing about dementia caregiving turns self-absorbed people into nice people. I've seen that with a lot of the caregivers I've known. We may have started out, it's all about me. You know, that's our generation. It's all about me. But we learn that our love can make the difference, that our attention, that our paying attention, our listening to somebody, our doing things with them, our not abandoning them, our not neglecting them. We have so much that we can do to help them have better quality of life. And my time as a dementia caregiver, both for my mother and then when I would visit my aunt, I learned an amazing amount. So if you ever have an opportunity to spend time with an Alzheimer's patient or a dementia patient, do it. Open your heart. Tell them how wonderful they are. Tell them how beautiful they are. Tell them how much you enjoy being with them, even if you can't hear words back from them. It's amazing the connection that you can develop, and they will respond, and they will value the connection. They need it as much as you do. One last thing before we end tonight. We're going to start the March. The 22 Adventures in Refreshing Your Life is going to be starting in just a few weeks, March the 1st through March 22nd. Matter of fact, our next Catalytic Radio, we're going to be talking about the 22 Adventures. I'm working with my first group now. We're having a great time together. They are progressing with leaps and bounds. I'm so proud of them. And I'm going to have some of the students on to talk about their experiences. So you don't want to miss that. That's going to be February the 23rd, the day after we end the class. So they'll be fresh and ready to tell you things. Details will be posted at transformingthroughlove.com/events. That's transformingthroughlove.com/events. Give me 30 minutes a day for 22 days, and you'll see a big change in your life. These people are having a blast, and so am I. It's a beautiful, supportive community. And I hope you'll go to the website, read about the current program. I've got already information up for the February program. That's up right now. The March program, March 1st. March 22nd. The cost is $103.33, and 22 days will change your life. Thank you for being with us tonight. Thank you for letting me talk about my mom. Thank you for letting me talk about love. Thank you for taking what we say tonight into the world and making this world a much more loving place. We all need that to happen. Thank you. Happy Valentine's Day. Have a great rest of your evening, a rest of your day. Love to you. See you in 2 weeks. Many blessings.